Good morning, friends. It's Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins. This show is engineered expertly by Mr. Terry Wilson, produced by Kathleen Morgane, and the concept of the Friday show was developed by Lisa Smith, for which we are eternally grateful. My guest today is George McCartan. George winds up our string of election interviews, and George is running for the Ward 1 position for Astoria City Council. And I happen to live in Ward 1. In fact, I drive by George's house all the way going home. George, welcome.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate you asking me to be on your program today.
Well, I'd like to start out, George, if you could give us a little kind of a biographical sketch. I know that from reading the material that you've led a wildly interesting life. And tell us about it.
Wildly interesting, perhaps. I was born in Buffalo, New York. At that time, it was the seventh largest city in the United States. And I grew up there and went to grammar school and high school there. After that, I went to Niagara University for a degree, a bachelor's degree in philosophy. And then I took off for Europe for 4 years to the University of Louvain in Belgium. That dates from the 12th century, actually. And I had two graduate degrees there, one in education and one in theology. At the time of graduation, I was ordained a priest, and I came back to Buffalo and practiced in the priesthood for some time in various places like chaplain in the hospital and assistance to various parishes. At one point in time, the Vietnam War was coming to a head, as it were, and I joined clergy and laymen concerned about Vietnam for some protests in Washington. When I came back, I was called in, and the bishop said, you're embarrassing our president. At that time, Catholics were leaning more toward Democrat Party than Republican Party. And so I said, well, fine, I'll stop. And long story short, somebody was coming to do a rally in Buffalo, and evidently I wasn't to be trusted, so I was put on a 21-day cruise as a chaplain on a 21-day cruise in the Mediterranean. I tried to get out of that by suggesting other people, and they said, no, you're going. And during that time, I had plenty of time to meditate and so forth. I decided that it was probably time to leave the active priesthood, at least. And I eventually came to California and worked in the Job Corps for a few months and then in social work for a while. And finally, I was appointed to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission as a manager, investigator, conciliator, management, and sometimes was the regional director for the San Francisco region. I stayed there, and the government was nice enough to put me through night law school. And when I completed that, and after being 7 years with the government, I went into private practice with a partner, and we did that for 20 years, and at which time we split up, and I decided, with a little coaching from my spouse, to move to Oregon, Southern Oregon, Jacksonville. And we resided there for something like 16 years or so, 17 years, and then we came up here. So we've been here for 8 years in Astoria, again, because the spouse had a very fine offer of a job. She's a certified hand specialist. She works for Astoria Physical Therapy as that kind of person, and she is the only certified hand specialist in the north coast of Oregon and southwest coast of Washington. During that whole time, I always was active in appearing before councils, before commissions. I was active in the school board, and I always reached the point where I would try to reconcile differences, try to do it by showing the self-interest of the antagonist, if you will, show that their own self-interest was at stake, and that they could join with the community interest at the same time. And I went along like that. When I came here, I appeared before the Planning Commission, the Historical Commission, and in the last over a year now, I've been going to almost all the council meetings.
So given that background, what motivated you to actually run for an elected position?
Well, more and more as I sat through the meetings, I felt that there were certain things lacking, specifically the information being disclosed in the way it was being disclosed or not being disclosed. The financials were always a question. And I saw certain things being neglected. At one point, our esteemed engineer had to get up one night and scream at the council about having no place for the homeless people when it was 26 degrees outside. These are the kind of things that kind of brought it to a head, but I didn't think about running for council until a number of times people came and said, are you running for council? Or and will you run for council? And why don't you run for council? And so eventually in July, I decided, okay, I'll throw my hat in the ring. At that time, I thought it was going to be Arlene Lemire would be the opponent, and I knew my chances were extremely slim going against somebody who's an incumbent for two terms.
But as it turns out, your opponent is Zetti.
Yeah, it turns out that Arlene decided she would run for mayor, and Zetti decided she would then run for as an opponent to me in the Ward 1.
Now, you mentioned some concerns about financial irregularities at the city. I'm wondering whether you can be a little more specific.
Well, I'm not going to say that there are irregularities as such. But what happens is when you look at the budgets, and I've looked extensively over the last three fiscal year budgets, and you look at the way they're presented and the way the data is presented, it becomes very complex. It's kind of a poor management tool.
Well, George, I'll have to tell you that I was on the budget committee for several years, and I'll agree with you 100% because we would get these budgets that were presented in such a way that they were almost incomprehensible. And after all the time I spent on the budget committee, I never did really get a real handle on how those things are presented. So could you talk about that a bit?
That certainly is true. And one of the things going through these budgets, you would think that somewhere along the line, from the time it comes out from the finance director to the people like yourself on the committee and eventually gets to the council, that some questions would be raised and some figures would be changed. Somebody would say, wait a minute, what are we just spending X number of dollars for this for? And in all three, I did three fiscal years, and I'm sure there's got to be more. I must have missed some. But I found only one occasion when a question was raised and the figure was changed. And that was at the council level. And it happened to be, I forget who it was, but they felt that their constituents were not getting a proper amount here. And so they increased it by $10,000, this particular item. That's the only time. We've got the civilian committee, if you will, the citizen committee, to look at it, and nothing happens. Nothing. It doesn't appear that if anything's questioned, anything has ever changed. And then it gets to the council, and they just seem to rubber stamp it. And I think that's something that has to be looked at right now and questioned, because we've been going down the road here now, spending on some big items like the sports complex, like the Surging Waves Park and the City Hall restoration, all fine things. But now we've reached a point where we've had to borrow to get one fire truck renewed, get a new one, and then we've got the ladder truck. And that's kind of scary. When I went at the meeting, when we had the meeting of the city here for the city officials and the equipment and so forth, and I talked to the chief maintenance person out there, and I said, well, what about this ladder truck? He said, well, we can't, the hydraulics are going, and we cannot get parts. The company's been out of business for years. So we have to go new. And that's almost $1 million. And we don't, there's no sign here that we've got anywhere near that. I am not up on a hill with three stories necessarily, but some people are. If there's a fire in the upper levels, they're going to need that ladder truck. And it kind of concerns me, and I'm sure it must concern other people that maybe it's not going to rise up there.
Are you getting any traction down at City Hall with these arguments, which make a lot of sense to me?
Well, one of the things I was very upset about was the fact that they rely on strictly the online computer-based information system. In other words, if you are adept at going online and checking out the agenda and the backup materials for what the council is going to be discussing and working on, fine, you're in good shape. But if you happen to be a person that can't afford either a computer, or maybe you can afford a computer but you can't afford to be online, you're out. And so I did for a while get them to at least do what they were doing, I guess, years ago, and that is put a copy on the Friday afternoon when the agenda is released, put a copy over in the library. And I also got them to make an enclosure about the sales of these excess properties, so-called, in with the water bill. In that little space they have there, they were able to lead people to figure out how to get further information on that. And then all of a sudden, I don't know, just about 45 days ago or so, I called the library and said, well, do you have the latest agenda? I said, we haven't had an agenda since June. So it just fell by the wayside again. And I think, you know, the telephone, you can do a lot of recordings on the telephone. They could put that agenda on there and have it read over for the people, and you could press a button and get further information on it without too much, wouldn't be very costly to do that. So those are alternatives as to getting the information. And then talking back is something else again. When you want to express yourself and go in there, I was always, if I was going to get up and say anything, I would try to be well prepared. And yet I've sat there and had one council person say, well, you just don't understand. And the mayor would get up and say, well, it's only a few of you that are concerned about this. And somebody's always going to be. Well, that's okay if you're used to doing that. But you get people that maybe it's their first time up there and they feel strongly about something. And then you get a response like that, that they don't exactly come back for a second helping on something that concerns them in the future.
I'd like to remind our listeners, Terry, that it's Friday here at Coast Community Radio. I'm your host, Jim Wilkins. Terry Wilson is running the board for us today. And we're visiting with Georgia McCartan, who is on the ballot running for city council from Ward 1. Now, George, the city does a whole lot of other things besides take care of the financial statements. Particularly, I'm thinking of infrastructure kind of stuff and the things that actually make up a city, the public safety, utilities, and that kind of stuff. Have you got any ideas about what could be done in those directions?
Well, as I've been going door to door over the past couple months, one of the big things that comes up time and again is the water rates, which of course also includes the sewer rates. And because of this combined sewer overflow system that we're having to install little by little at great expense, that's being passed on into the water bill, water and sewer bill every month, and it's now up to an increase for this year at close to $6 a month. And that's a big concern for people, and there's been a suggestion, why not simply do a bond issue on that and stick it in the tax page every year, and you can at least write that off your write that off your income tax, possibly. One of the other things is looking at, when you get into these big projects, trying to assess them a little bit better as to what you're really getting into. A perfect example of that is the sports complex. It was estimated it would be under $500,000 that we were going to be responsible for. And it ends up, had to take another loan out of $900,000 because they were a little off on how much that was going to cost us. And it ends up now that the city is the total owner of that, and they're leasing it to the school board. I thought the first impression you got was it was a trade-off behind the old field, and other than the city doing the capping of the garbage dump that existed before, we wouldn't have anything to do with it. But now we own it, and we're leasing it to the school district for no rent, but for their exclusive use. These are the kind of things that you have to look at, I think, try to look at and have the foresight to envision the possibilities of what you're really getting into before you do these big things. So I think what has to be done now are prioritize. Look at what's really needed. If you need a fire truck, you don't start saying, let's decide what we're going to do with the big hole over at Safeway there and what can we build out of that. It'd be nice to do that, but first you gotta do what the necessities are. And the environmental scene is another thing. And by that I mean not just the physical improving the carbon footprint, decreasing our carbon footprint, but how we relate to one another, both at work, at home, in the families, in our wards, and in our leisure time. And that, of course, brings up all kinds of issues: the homeless, the hungry, the mental cases that nobody seems to want to deal with at all. The other big object, of course, is really living wage jobs. We don't have a lot of those. A lot of our jobs, we have a pretty good employment rate going, but there are low-level jobs, a lot of them, service jobs. And we have to look at maybe some high-tech stuff, some alternative energy, small businesses that are supplying parts for a larger business that's manufacturing someplace, solar panels or whatever. And we have a number of structures that are empty and could be taken care of and taken over for some small manufacturing like that, I think. And the other thing, of course, is housing and trying to keep the level of price on some of those housings low enough so a working person might be able to buy a house. We've got 50% of our people are in renting. 50% of the houses are with renters here, which is way out of whack compared to the rest of Oregon and the country. These are things that many people say, well, that has nothing to do with the city council, but the city councilors are the leaders of the city, and I think that they have to they don't have to be throwing money at everything, but they have to get together and try to lead some teams, and that's what I address in some of my literature with Ward 1 people. We want to come together as a team and do something about some of these environmental situations.
Well, the city of Astoria is a municipal corporation, and it's limited in what it can actually do by the rules that govern municipal corporations. And I'm just trying to figure out how the city, as a municipal corporation, could do the kind of stuff that you're talking about here.
Well, I think,
the city provides water and sewer and that kind of stuff. And what you're talking about is a far cry from those kind of infrastructure things. So how would you alter the structure of the city in order to respond to these concerns that you have?
Well, I don't think you have to alter the structure itself, but I think you have to perhaps take different councilors and assign them the task of working together with the existing groups. Class of community action, and there's a dozen others that are kind of plugging the holes here vis-a-vis homeless and vis-a-vis hungry and the mentally ill, and assign each counselor to work on a certain aspect there. And like I say, it's not a matter of spending the money. It might be a matter of spending more time for the counselors in trying to lead and coordinate
Who would make these assignments that you're talking about?
Well, I think the mayor would make the assignments together with the okay from the counselors. That's a whole other aspect of the council that hasn't been done for some time. It's been exclusively the mayor's prerogative to appoint people to various commissions, committees, and to various duties. I think hopefully the new council and the new mayor will be a little more cognizant of the fact that he or she ought to include some input, at least, from counselors on these issues.
So you're proposing that the boards and commissions, which now are filled by mayoral appointment, would be filled how?
Well, maybe initially by the mayor, but with consultation, not necessarily consent, but consultation of the counselors, an input from the counselors. Or perhaps I have somebody in mind that I think would be really good for the historical commission, and they've told me they're interested. I should be able to suggest that to the mayor, and he should take that into consideration in making his appointments, or her appointments.
Well, you've been watching the council here for 2 or 3 years, and Willis Van Dusen's been the mayor for, what, 18 years? He's not running again. And he leaves kind of a remarkable legacy of stuff that he's helped. You know, Willis uses the term the team. He's always talking about the team, but Willis would actually be the captain of that team. And I wonder whether you could comment upon the legacy that he's leaving as he leaves office.
Well, you've got two very qualified people running for that slot, and they can do whatever they want. They will never be of the caliber or personality that our present mayor has, and they will probably not be able to accomplish things that he was able to accomplish without too much trouble. It doesn't matter if you had run-ins with him or various disagreements. You know, he 5 minutes later, you're shaking hands and talking about your motorcycles and stuff like that. And that's the way he was. And that's the way he is. Mm-hmm. And that's the way he will be. And nobody can succeed to that. He was born that way and developed that, whatever way you want to phrase it. And that will be a loss. There's no doubt about that. On the other hand, he became the central figure of operating the city, and I think it was a little overdone.
Okay. Now, another issue that the city's dealing with right now is the Riverfront Vision Plan, which deals with the riverfront from, I think it's 2nd Street East up to the East End Mooring Basin. And then the port and Floyd Holcomb jumped into the fray. I wonder if you could talk about your outlook regarding that issue.
Well, I think the under the circumstances, the Planning Commission did the best they could with who was on that commission and is on that commission in reaching a finality for the law of the Riverwalk. When that was passed on to the council, however, it was substantially changed with respect to opening up a hole where development would be a lot easier to bring about in the future, mm-hmm. Mainly giving in to the port and Mr. Holcomb. And I think the joinder of the port and Mr. Holcomb, especially being represented by the same council, was inappropriate, to say the least, and should probably not continue. I think we've got a new port executive, and I think the port and the city have to start working. There, again, you have to have one of the councilors and one of the port commissioners maybe getting together and starting to work together, because this opposition can't continue amicably.
Well, the port has been kind of in disarray for many years, but it seems that it's starting to become more effective, and that will make it easier for the city to work with them, I think.
That's right. I ran into Commissioner Fulton at a different venue, and we met, and we said, we got to learn to get this together. And I said, yeah, well, we'll wait till after the election to find out if we have to. But I said, whoever is elected has to get together. The port and the city has to get a better understanding of one another. They cannot be enemies.
Well, George, we've got about 3 minutes left. I'm wondering whether there's some specific issues that you'd like to talk about to wind things up.
Well, I think that we've been through them pretty well. The information, getting information to the people by every means necessary, and then listening at the council meetings, or if I email somebody, respond. Or even if you're saying you're not going to give me the information, tell me you're not going to give me the information. Maybe tell me why, but at least respond. I've sent emails. There's been no response whatsoever sometimes, and that's uncalled for. And the finances, the number of funds, the number of transfers, the very way the budget is presented. When you have an accountant like I do, look at that and tell you that it's kind of a shambles, and he wouldn't be able to guarantee very much of a positive outlook to, say, a newcomer coming in who's going to maybe start a business and wants to know, well, how stable is the city vis-a-vis their finances? And he said, I can't answer that. Not the way the budget and the accounting, the annual accounting is being done under the present reign. So I think, you know, that's got to be looked at very closely. As likewise, the environment, trying to seek out a way to generate jobs that will pay a really living wage to people, and maybe enable them to even buy a house.
You know, you mentioned that when you were campaigning, you're going door to door, and you got a lot of concerns about the exorbitant tax bills that we pay in town. We just got about a minute left, but were there any other issues that citizens brought up that we should know about?
Yeah, there's issues that we were running, and those who are already in the seats of council, you know, many of the things we've been discussing. But when you go door to door, you find out, well, hey, can they do something about this street here? Look at this. This mm-hmm. is really bad. I thought they were going to pave the streets this year. Well, they didn't do that part, and it is really bad. Or you get down to the people saying, well, it's nothing but a racetrack down there on Bond Street. Why can't we at least push that retaining wall back and make a bigger retaining wall so that you can make it a two-way street again and stop this people squealing along in the one-way area?
Yeah.
These are the kind of things that people are concerned about. They're concerned about, you know, increasing the amount of tourism, and catering to the tourists more, so building up the economy that way. Those are the things that I've run into time and again.
Well, George McCartan, I really appreciate you coming in and visiting with us here at the Friday Show. And next week is the election. Good luck to you. And friends, I'd welcome you to stick around and listen to Albert Smith's always wonderful Friday Folk Show. And until then, next week we'll be speaking with Betsy Johnson. I'm not sure whether she's going to be live in the studio or by phone, but one way or the other, we're going to talk with Betsy. So I look forward to seeing you then. Goodbye.